Hello, this is Lisa Niver from We Said Go Travel, and I'm so excited to be here today with Megan Murphy. Hi, Megan.
Hi, yay.
I love that you start with yay, and I see you have yay behind you. I absolutely loved your book. I see that behind you too. Your Fully Charged Life, a radically simple approach to having endless energy and filling your day with yay. So I know you have lightning bolts on you and behind you. Could you tell us a little bit about how did the lightning bolt become the symbol of your...
Sure. I think it's really important to surround yourself with visible and verbal messages of strength and positivity and resilience and things that you connect with that sort of work as a mantra. And for me, the lightning bolt dates back to my mom. So growing up, there was this picture of my mom on the wall and she was wearing this lightning bolt t-shirt and she had these epic braids and it was a honeymoon shot. She had road tripped to Yellowstone National Park with my father for their honeymoon. And I just grew up looking at this picture and sort of putting my mom on this pedestal because she was the type of person who was relentlessly confident and always basically kind of taught us that, you know, don't ask permission, ask forgiveness because everything is always possible. And I was really brought up that way. And I think having people in your life at a young age show you possibility, encourage you and cheer you on is really, really key. And, you know, I credit kind of witnessing that confidence and that sense of possibility as kind of encouraging, enabling me to find that for myself.
That's fantastic. I love that positive image from your mom. But can you talk a little bit? I think that when you were growing up, your image was a little bit more grumpy. And I think in the book, you even say neggy, like quite negative.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think so. I'm a person who trained to live with positivity, who trained to live with optimism and joy. And I say the same way I may train for a marathon or train to see my abs again after three kids. I trained to prioritize positivity and reprogram my brain to live with optimism and joy. I am a person who has a very strong negativity bias. I was a really grumpy kid. My nickname was Grumpy. I wrote a school play in fifth grade and my character that I wrote for myself was Neggy, the embodiment of negativity. And I really was a very pessimistic, angsty kind of kid. I can now look back and say that really what was happening is I've always been an empath and I had these big, big feelings, big happiness, big sadness, big fear, big anger. I just had big feelings and I didn't know what to do with them. And for me, that really kind of translated into an eating disorder. I wound up developing anorexia as a way to quiet all of those big emotions, right? Because as a kid, you sometimes get those messages of like, don't cry. Why are you so upset? And, you know, like, no. And so for me, it was like, oh my goodness, I don't want all this attention on my feelings. I'm just going to shut them all up. And I shut them up with an eating disorder because when you're starving, you're numb and you can easily just quiet everything. And so that was what my teen years were like, really, really tumultuous.
I know you speak in your book about anorexia and your friend, and I know eating disorders, especially working in a women's magazine, I'm sure that food and eating disorders are so prevalent and raising three kids. What do you say to people that are also struggling with that and trying to figure out how to quiet their emotions and pick something that is not harming?
Well, I think the first thing to know about eating disorders, it's really never about food and it's never really about exercise. It's about what feelings or emotions that you're trying to manage with food. What is fueling that addiction, right? And for me, I can now look back and say, I didn't know how to handle my feelings. I had big swells of energy and emotions, and I just didn't know what to do with them. And so I quieted them. For other people, it could be perfectionism. For other people, they could have gone through some type of, you know, mental or physical abuse, and they're band-aiding it with an eating disorder, right? It's an addiction. An addiction is never really about the wine. It's never about the drugs. It's never about the food. It's about this underlying problem that you're medicating with whatever the addiction is. And I think that's the beauty of my book, is that my book is a toolkit to help you get unstuck. It's not a replacement for therapy. It's not a replacement for medication if that's what you need, but it's a toolkit, a happiness toolkit that will help inch the happiness needle so that when you are going through hard things and hard times, you have resources, you have tools that you can rely on to help get unstuck.
I totally agree. And one of the things I loved was when you talked about being the boss of your brain. Mm-hmm. And I love that you said you can deliberately direct your brain to get on the yay bus or the it'll be okay bus or the sad and sorry for yourself bus. And so that really spoke to me. I love that. So can you talk a little bit more about either like how did that come to you or what people can do to switch buses?
Well, I think it's very clear to me that most times in life, I can't necessarily control what's happening to me. If, you know, my dad's diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and dies, I can't stop that. I can't think cancer away, but I can absolutely manage my reaction so that I can move through that hard thing with grit and grace. When I got COVID, I can't think away COVID. I can't pretend it's not happening, but I can change the way I look at it to help me move through it. And I think it's just understanding that our brain is incredibly powerful and that when we learn to do some sort of tricks that I call, you know, that I talk about in the book, but just a little bit of reframing, a little bit of cognitive reappraisal, it makes those hard things easier to manage and easier to get through. So we're never thinking away bad times. We're never thinking away bad things, but we're making choices that makes those hard things more manageable.
Absolutely. And I know I'm so sorry about your dad. I know that's something you talk about in your book and also turning a boo into a booyah. So can you talk a little bit about, I think you spoke to a lot of people in your book when you said, you know, journaling is not for everyone. And yeah. I think that journaling is definitely thrown out to many people as like the solution. And I love that you turned it into something so of today and now with the Yay List Instagram. So can you tell people
A couple of things here. So first of all, gratitude is absolutely the secret sauce in life. Grateful people are happier people. That is unequivocal. And that's science-backed. It's not even what I think. It's science-backed. But I do find I'm not somebody who's woo-woo. I'm not somebody who has crystals in my pocket. I'm somebody that works at this and I want practical tips. And I've been a service journalist for 25 years at places like I'm an editor-in-chief of Woman's Day. And I was at Good Housekeeping and Cosmopolitan and Self Magazine. And I think what my secret sauce is or what my skill set is that I'm able to fun filter news so that you might actually want to use it, right? So something like gratitude, right? Absolutely, we all need a gratitude practice and we need to practice gratitude, yes. When someone tells me to put something down in a gratitude journal or a gratitude diary, like maybe I'll do it for a day, but then I'm like, oh, thanks for one more thing to do. It's homework.
Yes.
And I can't keep that up. And so what I've learned that by asking myself, what made you say yay today? And asking my kids around the dinner table, what made you say yay today? Or before bed, what made you say yay today? That is absolutely a gratitude practice. It's a way to pause and appreciate the good in your day and to understand that, hey, there was good. Even on a bad day, there was good. And let's find it and let's celebrate it and let's hang on to it. But creating a yay list, my standalone Instagram account, the Yay List. That is simply a way to pause and appreciate. It's a gratitude journal 2.0, right? It's fun filtered version of keeping a gratitude diary. And that's what works for me.
I think it's a great idea. And I love that it's on Instagram. So everybody can kind of find you and figure out how can they either do something similar or maybe respond to what you're doing. I love that. Cause I think some of the things you talk about in the book, you had the, how to slam the brakes on your runaway brain and that sometimes it feels like you're on the Acela train to Sucksville. Yeah. And so I know for myself, when I was getting divorced, I felt like I lived in Sucksville. And when I read that you used the word Sucksville, I'm like, oh, I'm not the only one. Like it's, I think that's one of the things that we are all sort of searching for is, you know, is this normal? How do other people feel? And you know, that I think it's great that you created something, like you said, it's a gratitude journal 2.0.
And I think here's the key is why gratitude works so well is that when you're pausing and appreciating what's good in the world, it softens the edges of the bad and it makes the bad less prominent and less loud, less pronounced. And that's really the key because negativity can be so loud. And when you're going through a divorce, you're losing a loved one to stage 4 pancreatic cancer, like that negativity that bad is so loud and so glaring and so consuming that unless you work hard to punctuate that and soften those edges with moments of levity and light, you will absolutely be pulled down, absolutely just completely drained. And that's easier said than done, but the good that you're punctuating it with doesn't have to be big and it doesn't have to be massive. It can simply be noticing something good in your day. And I'll talk about it. It's something as small as like, wow, my neighbor Larry's irises are blooming. And he came over with a pair of scissors and said, cut some. And now I have this beautiful bouquet on my table. Like, that's a good day, right? And no matter what crap thing happened during the course of the rest of the day, what if I just allow that to be loud? What if I allow myself to appreciate those flowers and understand that even on this bad day, there was this moment of good, you know? And sometimes that's just what it's about, putting fun on the calendar, allowing yourself, even in tough times, tough days, to experience some moments of joy and kind of realizing that that's not frivolous and that's not silly, it's actually necessary. I think I've heard from so many people this year, like, you know, people have it worse than me and they get caught up in the hardship Olympics. And because other people have it worse, God forbid I were to enjoy myself or get excited about Taco Tuesday or a new dress, right? Because other people have it worse. And if I'm happy, I'm being somehow disrespectful or I'm crapping on their bad times. No, right? Like we deserve happiness. We deserve happiness even in hard times.
I really love what you just said about the hardship Olympics, because I think during this past, you know, it's been so uncertain during COVID. There's been so many challenges. And I do think there's a feeling that you can't be happy. Mm-mm. And, you know, what about other people who, you know, there's so many things.
Yeah. But
can you tell people a little bit about, I love your title in your hometown of Chief Spirit Officer.
Oh, it's funny, right?
I think that connects with Larry giving you the flowers. Like, you know.
Well, so 4 years ago, I was, you know, the then mayor appointed me Chief Spirit Officer, and it was just sort of an honorary title from in the, I did this, you know, I have sort of the, in a voluntary capacity of cheerleading for my town. And so I do as a hobby, I run an Instagram called Bestfield, New Jersey. The town is called Westfield. I call it Bestfield. And it rhymes with West, and it's just an effort to be to celebrate small businesses and the people and the places and the things that I think make Westfield the best field. And it's absolutely just a celebration of community and small businesses. And to me, I think it's really important to love where you live and have a sense of community belonging and pride. That's something that really on my worst days, I know that if I connect with my community, if I give back, if I feel a part of something, I'm better for it. Mm-hmm. And so that's an active practice for me. My neighbor, Larry, you know, is an unlikely friend. He's a divorcee and it just turned 60. And, you know, has been my neighbor for 8 years now. And we had this beautiful exchange where my kids would leave piles of rocks by his fence and then he would paint them. And then we would hide these Bestfield rocks, these spirit rocks all over town. And they would have messages like, you're stronger than you think you are. Or they'd be pizzas in celebration of the pizza run. Or we would make, he got really punny. He's very clever. He's an advertising guy. And he would write like crocodile rock and it would be a crocodile. Really, really fun. And he was going through some hard times and a divorce and had lost his dogs. And so this became this beautiful exchange between my kids and Larry and me and my kids, and then the community, because the people who found the rocks would get excited and celebrate too. So it was just this sort of happiness boomerang just by this simple act of painting rocks.
It sounds a lot like what you're saying is meet people where they are, right? Like,
yeah.
You, it's a funny thing, like you had rocks and he had paint, but it became something so
it became
much
such a really lovely exchange. I think here's the key is what I say to people. Community is incredibly important. And I geek out over the science in my book and Martin Seligman and the Perma Theory of Wellness, but like relationships are everything. People are the answer to all of life's problems, other people, right? And it doesn't have to, and it doesn't mean your key relationships. It's not necessarily your husband or your mother-in-law or your kids that are the solution. It's the cashier. It's the UPS driver. It's the person you decide to look up from your run or your walk and acknowledge and recognize, because people need to be acknowledged and seen. Especially after this year, people need to be seen. That feels good. And that doesn't mean you're going to have them over for a barbecue and braid their hair. but see them, right? Put your phone down and see them.
Right. Yeah, I think it's, I know you talked a lot about Seligman. He actually taught, when I was at Penn, he taught the class from his book.
Oh my God. What was it like to be in a lecture with him? I'm obsessed with him. And in my brain, I call him Marty because I pretend we're friends.
Well, I think he'd appreciate that. Who knows? Maybe we could do an interview, all of us.
Well, I can't get him to, I've reached out to him numerous times, but I've never heard back from him.
Oh, all right. Well, let's work the Penn Network.
Yeah, do that. I'd love to send him my book.
Okay. I will help you. The other thing I really loved in your book was all the F words. Because I think people love to think what the F word is. And I don't know if you could talk about the few steps of it, because I'm pretty sure there were five, maybe six if you count focus. But I think that we get so focused on making mistakes and then don't know what to do. And I think in your book, yeah, you gave a really clear path of like,
gotcha. And I change the steps on myself all the time too. But the first, so it's like when you make a mistake, the first F word is F it. Like actually F-U-C-K it, because that's usually what comes out of my mouth when I messed up. But then there's, okay, figure it out. Like, where did you go wrong? Okay, like, where did you go wrong? And if you can fix it, great, fix it. Take that effort and fix it. So you say F it, you figure it out, you fix it. And if you can't, then you have to forget it, right? Like, no stewing, no, like, move forward.
Mm-hmm.
You have to move forward. I think I'm forgetting one of the F's.
No, I think you got them all. I have F it, figure it out, fix it. Oh, flashback.
Yes, because you need to learn from it. And you also need to sometimes flashback to a thing you did right so that you stop beating yourself up. That's also really key. So it's like, you're not a failure because you effed up in this moment. Flashback to something you did right. And understand you're also a person who does things right. This was a blip on the radar, right? You effed up. Okay. Now, onward, forward.
I think it's really important because I think what I've noticed, certainly in hard times, like going through a divorce, I focused a lot on the F word of failure. And I think it's really helpful, your focus of like you said, looking for the positive, looking for the small things, activating gratitude, that without steps of how to get out of kind of the abyss, you know, people just suffer. And so I really like that you were really clear, like, yes, you made a mistake. And then
that's okay. Right. Right. Like, great. Take a moment, accept that. And I think that the thing is, like, that's what the whole book is about. Your fully charged life is simply about creating momentum for yourself. And what I say is, it's not a guide. It's not a plan. It's not a life makeover and overhaul. It's simply a toolkit that will help you create momentum so that you can get unstuck. I mean, I loved that New York Times article about languishing. I think so many people are in this joyless, stuck state, even as the world returns to so-called normal. And that's because we're not creating momentum. And it's literally that whole physics of a body in motion tends to stay in motion. And if you can start to create positive actions, well, then you can create a chain of positive actions and essentially get yourself out of the hole and move the happiness needle.
Yeah, I think that's so perfect. And then I loved the quote you have that says, the pessimist complains about the wind, the optimist expects it to change, and the realist adjusts the sails.
Yeah.
So I think that optimistic realism really sums up what you've been talking about is, I mean, I also love that you said just get on the jet ski.
I know, I was about to joke about that because that's the other thing. I'm like, and if not, like, hop on the goddamn jet ski.
Right, like there, but I think that's the, you know, what you're discussing is how do you make momentum? And then, you know, like,
fine. Well, here's the thing. Life is freaking messy and there's no clear path, right? And you're going to make mistakes and it's going to get messy again. And then you're just going to course correct. But nothing is all bad and nothing is all good. You know, what I like to say is, like, the glass is not half empty. It's not half full. The freaking glass is refillable. Like, right. Get the pitcher of water and put some more goddamn water in it. Like, life, you have to be a little scrappy and embrace the happy chaos and embrace the mess.
Right. I think that if there's one thing that people could take away, that's a great thing to take away, like refill the glass. Like, why are we so focused on how full it is?
Yeah.
It is a
what a waste of energy.
But it's interesting. Like, people ask that in interviews or on dates, you know, like, are you half empty or half full? I heard someone once say, I just get a different glass.
Yeah, but that's so I would probably argue with that, because that's running away from the glass, right? Like, I'm going to take the glass I have and make lemonade, you know, like.
No, I think that's really, really true. And I think that one of the things I really enjoyed so much about your book is the examples really stayed with me, like the wind in your sails, get on the jet ski. And the other one I loved is the, you talked about this already, about being in relationship, but about people being like taxis.
Oh, I love, I say, and it's so funny because I'm like, do I date myself with this? Because now everyone just takes an Uber. But I like to think about living with your cab light on. And it's just an analogy that resonates with me, because like, if you're standing in the street in New York and you're trying to hail a cab, well, if that light's not on, they're driving right by you. And what if I'm that cab? Like, what signals am I sending to tell people I'm open and receptive and ready to take a ride? You know, like, how am I living? How am I presenting? How am I showing up? That signals to other people that I'm here and I'm ready. And that's very, very important. Are you living with your cab light on? Are you receptive and open to the possibility? Because if you're not, if you are head down, hunched over, like nothing can happen. You're ensuring nothing can happen because you are closed off to possibility.
I really love that. And then I also think another thing that fits in with your having your cab light on is you talk about saying goodbye to people or signing emails with have your best day ever.
I do. I say that all the time. I like have the best day ever. And a lot of that, so there's two prongs to that. There's two things. I'm very much in life. So there's this interesting dynamic. Routine is really important for people. People thrive with a sense of routine. Kids need routine. Adults need routine. We need routine. But within routine, you need to shake things up or you wind up on autopilot and you stop noticing the world around you. And I think, how many times do you say to someone like, good morning, how's the weather? Like, you're not even listening because it's just this autopilot response, or you're leaving somewhere and you say goodbye. And you barely even hear that, right? Because it's just so whatever. And so when I end an exchange or I leave the gym or the grocery store, have the best day ever. Because I really actually do believe it could be, but I'm also waking someone up in that moment to this interaction, which is different than me just leaving with a autopilot goodbye.
I think that's really, really important. And then can you talk a little bit about the vitamin T too? Because I think as we're coming out of COVID in this time of, for a lot of people, alienation and loneliness, that as we get back towards.
Yeah. So I think of vitamin T as vitamin touch. And I think people need people, right? People need, we need hugs and kisses and squeezes. And for so many of us, the loneliness epidemic in this country only escalated by virtue of a pandemic where we had to hide from each other, right? And I get, like, moms are probably like, nobody touch me. Everybody's hanging on me all day long, especially if you're breastfeeding. Like, I get that. Like, you're like, I got more vitamin T than I need in a lifetime. But for people who are not, like, who haven't been around people and who haven't had hugs and handholds and any kind of that affection, just recognizing how important that can be. And maybe that needs to come from the form of a pet, or maybe that means you just need to be caring for something like a plant. But like, people need to be needed. People need to feel held and cuddled and touched. And that's important. And if that means maybe you go for a massage just to have some kind of human connection, like, it's actually important.
Yes, it's very important. And I also would love if you talk a little bit about, you talk in the book about how kindness is magic, mm-hmm. and that the importance of, you have a hashtag kindness goals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, here's one of the things, kindness is life. It is everything, and it is magic. And kind people are clearly my kind of people. Nothing bad ever comes from being good and kind. And I think it's the one thing, like if you can sprinkle kindness like confetti in every cliche in the book, we all benefit. We all benefit from kindness. The person being kind benefits, the person receiving kindness benefits. And there can be this kindness boomerang that when you put good out into the world, good comes back to you. And sometimes in very unexpected ways. I just can't encourage people enough to practice kindness.
Can you speak a little bit behind you? It looks like maybe the vase has a lightning bolt.
Oh, my daughter made that for me for Mother's Day.
Oh, it's so beautiful. I was going to ask you if maybe you were selling those and people could get them.
Oh my gosh. Everybody wants me to have merch and I need to get in on that. I have no merch, but I have all kinds of fun stuff. So my daughter, like I got a flower delivery and it was just this boring white cylinder. She painted it orange. She put this patch on it, which was a patch that had fallen off a sweatshirt that I washed, and she Mod Podged it on there. And I just absolutely adore it. She gave it to me for Mother's Day.
Oh, well, happy Mother's Day. And that's amazing. And it's perfect with your book. All right. So we'll look forward to when we can buy vases and sweatshirts, but for now, to remind everybody about the name of your book and where they can get it.
So my book is called Your Fully Charged Life. It is available wherever books are sold. Most people buy it on Amazon. I always encourage people to shop local, shop small at a local bookstore if you can, but hey, it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold. And I'm always so grateful if people rate and review the book on Amazon. That's like an author report card, and it's super, super helpful.
Perfect. And if people want to find you, do you have a website? Obviously, you have the Instagram account.
Sure. I'm super busy on Instagram at Megan B. Murphy. And then I have my website is meganbmurphy.com. And it's all the letters, meganbmurphy.com. I'm working on my newsletter. It's not out there yet, but I'm working on it. And that's just a place where you can see some of my TV clips and news about the book and what's
happening. You really do. And I appreciate you sharing that with me and all the listeners. And thank you for your wisdom.